Yeah, I'll just mention with you guys, it was mentioned there's quite a few new people here, possibly people just starting off with the practice. So I'll try to be careful with the terms I use. I'll try not to use any kind of say Buddhist terms, Pali terms. You guys may not be familiar, many of you. One thing I noticed though with the sitting meditation, if you find that you're bobbing and you can't sustain your focus, you know naturally, because many of you guys are working full time, so you're going to really feel the underlying tiredness, you know, working through the week and smartphones, computers, internet, all this stuff. It's mentally tiring. It's only when you many people when they come on retreat, they especially the long retreats, they really feel it the first couple of days. You know, that really deep underlying tiredness from just running around with working life and family and whatnot. But if you find that with a sitting, if you're tired and you're restless, you just can't get focused, you can't get peaceful. You know, always get up and walk meditation. Just walk relaxed, slowly. You know, focus on the feelings either in the legs or in the feet. You know, keep doing that that Anicca mantra. You know, that's, once you really start to get that rolling, once you start doing that for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then you'll start to see what the capability of it is, because you're aligning your mind with the ultimate nature of the universe. It's something that you guys can see quite clearly, the changeability of the universe from start to finish. Things like emptiness, egolessness, you know, these are, the average person can't get a grasp on that kind of stuff unless you've got an incredibly profound meditation. But the changeability, you can see, you know, you can see it with your own eyes to a reasonable degree. And make sure if as long as you don't find it too disturbing, keep that Anicca mantra rolling, because the ability to get peaceful is greater with that than just walking and sitting, you know, just say sitting meditation with the breath, walking meditation, focusing on sensation, you know, with that Anicca mantra together makes a big difference, and it gets you peaceful much faster, and the peacefulness lasts a lot longer, because you don't want a situation where you have to meditating for 3 to 4 hours at a stretch just to get a really good state. You really want to see a decent state after 1 hour, if possible. So, one of the retreatants mentioned to give a talk on confusion, and so naturally, every single one of us, we experience that at some point in our lives. But what actually is it? What is that state of mind? And so confusion tends to relate to you know, things like excessive thinking, like really, really strong, overwhelming emotion. You know, you've, there's a number of options, you just don't know which one to take. And you know, because people can be put into circumstances, you know, even in partnership, where you could be spending time with someone who has good qualities, but also they've got some characteristics as well which may be quite disturbing, or you might find quite off-putting. So you could be with someone that you are quite attached to, but you've got like a mix of qualities with the partnership, that person may behave in a way which is you may feel is just not good for you at all. So you can get a mix of different views, opinions, a mix of different feelings, and it may confuse you, and you may not know which way to go. What choices do I make? Do I stay with this person? Do I take that new job? Do I move location? Do I get a divorce? You know, I it's like the person may not know exactly which way to go. So I mean, how do we get any clarity with this kind of experience? You know, if I'm completely confused, I just don't know what to do or which way to go. How do I possibly say make some headway to you know, try to find my way through this forest of maybe doubt, and it could be a mix of all sorts of different feelings. You could even think, when you talk about confusion, Confusion can be like a blanket statement which can incorporate things like, things like anger, even jealousy, sort of the ability to, the ability, the lack of ability to make decisions. One holds back, one's afraid, one's insecure. It's like a friend of my brother said. I mean, my brother had the same attitude as well. You know, he thought that when me becoming a monk, going to the monastery, becoming a meditation monk, he thought I was essentially running away from the world. But those guys spend, they spend half their lives running away. With movies, with sexuality, with partnership, with motorcycles. Anything you can possibly think of. This is no judgment on people in general. Society, but these guys thought they saw it as a weakness. You're not strong enough to stay in the world. You don't want to, hold down a long term work and pay your mortgage and this and that. But it's a matter of interest. From age 15, I was interested in this path. And but I know for a fact, even though those two guys, the reasonably tough guys, they really couldn't put up with it. They couldn't stand it. This particular lifestyle, but they're doing quite well with their lay direction, with their work, their personal lives. They're doing quite well, but in essence, that confusion. So it's like, what are we looking at? So we're looking at lack of clarity, lack of direction. The person just can't see clearly. And one thing which tends to get people is excessive thinking and strong emotions, not just one emotion, but a number of emotions, which really sends you topsy-turvy, and it just pushes and pulls you and pushes and pulls you, all these different feelings which other people can possibly bring up with you. Or you can have a boss who likes to play games, and he expects you to work hard and do this and that, but he's also he can be toying with you. He can make life difficult for you. He could be trying to intimidate you, and then you get all these different conflicting, contradictory type of emotions, which can really, even physically, make people physically sick. Can disturb their mental health. So you're looking at extremes in this situation. People can quote examples from a number of areas. Within the family, at work. Could even be traveling, could be especially financial pressure, on people, the ability to afford a mortgage and having what do they call it, security with one's work in the long term when you've got a mortgage for 15, 20, 30 years. So, this can lead to excessive proliferation, lack of stillness, clarity, and the way to overcome this kind of thing is you've got to get at least a small degree of centeredness, of stability, grounding oneself. And you can certainly do that with the meditation, because once you start to meditate and you develop an ability to let go and start to empty the mind out, of excessive thoughts, excessive feelings, then you start to get some perspective on your experience. Because a person can be under stress, can be up against challenging circumstances, but if the mind is just reasonably peaceful, they won't be overwhelmed and completely confused by all this mental activity. So even for example, with Achyam Brahm, his workload is quite extensive, and so is Achyam Brahmali. Achyam Brahmali just did five full days for a retreat for the Singaporean fraternity. Achyam Brahm's flying out today to Singapore. So, you got it. But the thing is, both of them handle their workload very, very well. But Achyam Brahm tends to be happy and humorous and jolly. And it takes an incredible amount of pressure before he really starts to show it, So being in the abbot's position, it's really no fun, like, at all. The amount of stuff that you have to deal with, from easily 101 different directions. People expect all sorts of things from you. So it's a very, very, very tricky, challenging position. But the ability is, when you, if you've been meditating for quite some time and you've got, you've got good quality meditation, it gives you a degree of resilience. You know, you've got this very, very spacious mind, patient, spacious, accommodating, kind, sort of like compassionate mindset, which can deal easily five times the kind of pressure that you would even get maybe with a CEO of a big company. I mean, some people in high power positions, they thrive on the challenge, the energy. I was with my mother the other day, and we were at a coffee shop, and we had to have lunch. We had an appointment, neurological specialist, and there was a young Indian man, and he was with an older gentleman in the large cafe coffee shop, and this young man was it sounded like he really knew his stuff, but he was just talking, I mean, just non-stop for about well over 1.25 hours or 1.5 hours, but it sounded like he knew his his business dynamics and finance and this and that. But the older gentleman must have been business orientated as well, because the kind of language he was using was quite sophisticated. We're talking about market language, financial terms, all this kind of stuff. And the older man was listening, and the young guy just buried him in all this information and knowledge and this and that, and almost giving the just showing just what a degree of mastery that he had on his area. And the level of confidence and maybe support that he, or maybe financial support or gain he could enlist from the older gentleman. So you can have people who run, people's minds are different. Some people who have who run very strong emotions, who think a lot, but they actually thrive on stress. They feed on it. It drives them. And some people can cope with it very, very well. But half the population aren't necessarily built like that. They don't like excessive pressure, excessive responsibilities. Problems and hassles just coming in from all directions, where you've just got no peace, you've got no rest. If you push people too long for years on end, eventually some people break down. So, like even little things like, say, in the funeral industry, they have a guideline where their people, their team members, are supposed to go on holiday. It's an understanding that they're supposed to go on holiday every 2 years maximum. They've got to take a break, even if it's only for 1 week. So even if you're the big boss of one of the funeral service organisations, even if you're the CEO, even of WA, the understanding is that you've got to go on holiday, absolute minimum a week, 2 weeks, because the degree of, especially the emotional, I help families with funerals on a, not say irregular basis, maybe at least once every couple of weeks or so, and but for me, there's absolutely no real pressure, no real emotional stress, hardly at all. I'm just quite happy to help the families out. Something which is important for all of them, to make sure that the ceremony is done as best as possible for mum, dad, or the person we've lost. But in essence, it depends on your mindset. This kind of thing, stuff can drive you, can feed you, can really make you perform, bring out the best in you when you're under pressure. And some people, if you don't put any pressure on them, they just fall asleep. They get lazy, they lack energy. But some people, you've got to push them just a little bit to get them to really go up a gear or two. But if it reaches the point where it's excessive, then you're looking at high levels of stress. It's too demanding, this and that. But with the meditator's mind, as the at least minimum, say, as the weeks and the months go by, you start to get a feel for the meditation practice, and you get the a kind of the peacefulness. Once you really get a handle on it, that peacefulness, even when you're quite, you're quite busy and there's a lot of stuff happening, that you can still see it in the background. You just don't lose it completely. Like one of our monks who went back to lay life many years ago, been a monk for at least 5 years, so had a good grounding in the Buddhist teaching and meditation practice, and he was doing some work for us in the forest, and he would meditate in the morning for about 20 minutes, and then he would be out in the forest on the property for, say, absolute minimum, well over six, probably up to about 8 hours a day, with the chainsaw screaming, for 6 to 8 hours. And but he said even then, I mean, he'd be wearing earmuffs, earplugs, but even then he could still see some latent peacefulness in the mind just from that 20-minute sit with the chainsaw screaming, virtually the vast majority of the day. So it's not to be underestimated, the level of how deep the peace can go into the mind. And even I've had I was at home with my dad when he was going back a couple of years when he was alive, and I had to set up his computer, the internet access, the modem, all the rest of it, and I had to be very careful because I had to set up all his accounts, the bank accounts, every Gmail, everything, with the password. So I didn't sit and walk for a couple of days, but I did that one mantra. I did that one mantra per minute, just all day and night, 18 hours a day, for about 3 days. While this was this thing with the computer system was rolling, and I got back to the monastery, so I didn't really walk and sit virtually at all for 3 days, and just did that little mantra, very light meditation, mindfulness training. Came back to the monastery, sat meditation, and just got peaceful straight away. So these kind of things do make a difference. I mean, I had been meditating, say roughly about 15 years previously, so it does make a difference. You get the a sense of, when you've been going for a minimum 10, 15 years, the meditation's reasonably firm, it's grounded, and you can pick it up very quick, So even if you don't meditate 3 or 4 days, you go back, it only takes you a couple of hours to get back to where you were, depending on circumstances. But that's usually the way it works, because you've got the training effect. So with all of us, with that principle, the meditation effect, training one's mind, training oneself to be peaceful, to be wise, and so in essence, that a sense of confusion. If your wisdom faculty is reasonably sharp, your understanding of your personal experience is reasonably strong, and this is why I always put emphasis when you guys are meditating. Don't, I give you little bits and pieces, but don't ever neglect that. Even, say for example, if you're walking meditation, sitting here, and you start bobbing, or you're getting tired and this and that, you've got to raise energy, increase your understanding, start investigating it. When you look at the Buddha's enlightenment factors, it starts with mindfulness, with what you guys are doing, with the meditation process, and then investigation of dhammas, investigation of reality. And that means your feelings, your thoughts, your personal experience at home, with the family, at work, everything. Your whole life experience as a human being. And don't think that that little tiff I had with my brother was just so trivial and this and that. But really explore these things. I mean, teach yourself and learn. This is if you want to look at mental energy, this is where it comes from to a large degree. So even though I was talking to a reasonable degree there yesterday, and I can I'm not a big talker, but I can go on for hours and hours if it's necessary, but I can still go back and I can sit meditation and I can get peaceful straight away, even if I'm talking with you guys, doing interviews, doing these little talks and meditation instruction, all the rest of it, because when I'm talking, I'm not only teaching, supporting you guys, but I'm teaching myself at the same time, because I'm exploring different aspects of Dhamma, and I'm going into detail, and I'm trying to give you the big picture, trying to give you all the information. So when you guys start investigating your personal experience as a human being in this world that we live, that you're actually increasing the mental energy in the mind, because the Buddha said the enlightenment, the factors for enlightenment is mindfulness training, which is the meditation practice in one section, strict mindfulness training. Then investigation of reality, you know, your investigation of your mind experience in different ways, and then like energy starts to rise. And so even though my dad was very much a what would you call him? Very interested in learning and understanding. He was always reading and studying since age probably about 15, and even when he was 60, 70, you know, just reading, studying every single day. I mean, I didn't even have to bother reading, you know, like reading books or even going on the internet. I just ring my father and asked the latest synopsis on, or it could be something like it could be something on, say, Syria, or even the, you know, both of us had an interest in the Middle East, on the Palestinian conflict in Gaza. You know, it could be absolutely anything in the world, and my father would know in very, very fine detail. But one thing I noticed about him was he was an average man, a bit, you know, definitely smarter than the average man, but his mental energy, his mental energy was much higher than normal. The sharpness and the speed of the mind was higher than normal for someone in his category, and it comes from years of studying and reflecting and investigating and understanding. You know, like, you know, he would be telling me things about the Middle East and about the Arab tribes, Muslim history, all this kind of stuff. Fine detail dynamics with you know, like Arab tribal culture. You know, this kind of stuff, which not everyone may be familiar with unless it's your a topic of interest. But that was one thing that was very clear to me, was the sharpness of the mind. Even at 80 years of age, he wasn't deteriorating at anywhere near the same level as other men of his age. But naturally, he was on quite a good diet, and it makes a big difference, because if your diet is too rich, you know, too much meat, fat, sweets, too many irritants like salt and chili, but especially the big ones, too much fat, meat and sugar, you accelerate the degenerative disease process in both the body and the brain as well. You know, you get atherosclerosis in the brain, restriction of blood circulation with the brain, ear, eyes, and whatnot. And I've seen it just again and again and again. But yeah, getting back to the that main point. With clarity, once you're able to get a handle on the meditation, you develop the meditation to the best of your ability, because it, you know, because your mind is constantly changing, your feelings, your thoughts, the way you see the world from minute to minute, you know, there's a slight change, and the people you contact, Once you get that underlying just a little bit of peacefulness, then the clarity starts to rise. You start to get some perspective. So say if my mind is just an absolute mess, and I'm completely befuddled by all these thoughts and feelings and stress and this and that, and I just don't know which way to turn or what to do. If I was able to just flick the switch and get my mind peaceful right then a large part of that stress would be gone. A big chunk of that stress would be gone if I was peaceful. And then with that peaceful mind, I would have more clarity to work out which direction that I move in order to deal with the stuff, you know, with the stuff that or the problems that I've got on my plate at that time. So it's like being Ajahn Brahm's simile of being say in the forest, say like a very, very like large, thick forest, and now when you say look at meditation power or the level of clarity, the level of energy in the mind, where, you know, you're just stumbling around in the dark with just a candle. And you know, you really can't see very far. You can't see the path. You don't know necessarily which way to turn. You know, you're just lost in the darkness. But when you've got like one of these rechargeable halogen LED lanterns with, you know, maybe a million candle power, you can see a lot further, more clearly, and you can distinguish what's around you. You can distinguish what is going on and what's happening. So, you know, one of the major Christian speakers I come across many, many, many years ago. He was a fundamental Christian, and his perspective on meditation was that if you make the mind empty, you know, you're just making space for the devil to come in. But that's not correct. It's the complete opposite. When your mind is still and peaceful and content, you're not interested in getting up to any kind of tricky, sneaky, dodgy behavior. I mean, with anyone, anywhere, or within family, with money, it could be work, could be absolutely anything whatsoever. So, with that empty, spacious mind, you're actually a better quality human being. So that kind of perspective would only come from someone who really hasn't understood meditation and may not meditate at all. Because the thing is, with meditation, even that, you know, you had the desert fathers in ancient Egypt, 4th and 5th century Egypt, especially around the Nile Valley area. There's a number of regions there, and their practitioners, you know, both male and female. They're religious aspirants, and probably there were communities of lay disciples, and you know, they practice meditation to a significant degree, because how can you realize oneness with God? How can you realize the sheer boundlessness of the universe and the boundlessness of God's love if you don't recite God's word? And you know, there's many, many words that they use in Islam, Christianity, the Jewish faith. You know, like these very simple mantras that you do for hours and hours and hours every day. But it just opens the mind right up, and then people start to touch on these very deep spiritual experiences that Jesus and the saints, the recognized saints that we see within the Christian faith. So, but you know, with one's personal experience, what people, to give you an idea, this is something which is this is a good example. I met a long term meditation teacher when I was up north. It's not far from my father's place, and he's a long term clinical psychologist, very smart, capable guy. And what he does, he was an ex monk. And he must have been a monk for at least 5 years before he returned to lay life. But he kept meditating on a daily basis. He's quite successful as a lay meditation teacher. But what he does with his clients, with the clinical psychology, he gets them to meditate for an absolute minimum 5 to 10 minutes before they even start the session. That's the prerequisite for a clinical appointment with himself. Is we meditate for, I give you just simple meditation instruction, we meditate 5-10 minutes, and then we'll start to discuss your personal experience, if there's any issues or you know, whatever there is of importance that you need to talk about. And he found that even his lay disciples and his clients told me that he was very good with the counselling, with the meditation instruction. Now, being a monk and being a long-term meditation teacher makes a really big difference, because you're getting a very good feel for people and the stuff that they go through in general society. But with that, you know, that little meditation session at the beginning of every counselling appointment, that the person concerned would have a much more clear, accurate perspective on what mum and dad did to them when they were a child, or or you know the what would you call it, the games that were being played out in the family, and all, you know, all the 101 things which can happen to people on a personal level, that the person had a much better understanding, had more clarity with their issues, and he found that they, what's the right, he found that they were able to come to terms with their experience, and they were able to, he was able to give much more, I mean, more clear advice, clear, accurate, comprehensive advice. They had a better understanding of what they were going through, and to, you know, to come to an understanding of why they felt the way they did about the situation, about what actually happened to them. So, you know, you're getting a much deeper perspective on what the person's experience is, and that leads to a reduction in the resolution and the recovery, time scale, with the kind of problems we go through as human beings. So if my mind is a complete mess, so to speak, and then I go to a good quality clinical psychologist, and I'm not meditating, and that person is not giving me instruction, that the depth of the psychologist's understanding, it tends to be less. When you're looking at therapists, social workers, welfare workers, even policemen and women, that the meditators have a much more intuitive understanding of other human beings. They can connect with them. They tend to connect with them more effectively. They tend to be more patient, more receptive. You know, they'll listen to people. They'll hear them out. They're less challenging, less hostile. With some people, they might be right in your face from, like, in the first 60 seconds, but the meditators, you know, because of the increased awareness, sensitivity, intuitive emotional intelligence, they tend to approach you in a manner which is based in understanding and wisdom. You know, because of, you know, they're sharpening their own mind. They're developing these deeper, I say, spiritual emotions and qualities which rise to the surface. As one stills and purifies the mind at the surface to the intermediate level, you see these deeper human qualities rising to the surface. So in a nutshell, that same principle, no matter how confused you are, no matter how much stress you're under, no matter how many people are in your face or giving you trouble or this or that, the more peaceful you are, the better you will be able to handle all that stuff. You'll be able to make decisions in relation to these issues with greater clarity and greater depth. You'll be less stressed, more patient, and in the long term, you'll have more ability to bring about a reduction or a reduction and resolution of problems, conflicts, and the complexity that we have, say, in our modern existence. You know, going back 100, 200, 1,000 years, life was so much more simple. You know, people didn't have the range of problems that we have now. You know, we're looking at the complexity of human society with all these different things happening. The complexity of things like family life and the home and money, business. You know, even the whole thing with the whole COVID thing, and now this major humanitarian disaster with Russia and Ukraine. you know, this impinges on people. It affects them. And so, yeah, so yeah, exactly that. The more, in a nutshell, the more peaceful you are, the more effective you will be in dealing with the problems and complexities of, say, modern human life. Okay, let's think now. What we'll do, we've got less than an hour before lunch at 11. And what I want you to try now is perceptions on the breath. I want you to do this. It's a more of a mild loving kindness on the breath, the breath meditation. And what it involves is radiating this friendly feeling towards the breath. So, you know, as you know, the breath, in reality, the breath, you can consider your breath to be your friend quite easily, because the breath is what sustains and nourishes your body, your physical body. It provides energy, provides health. You know, helps to purify the bloodstream, and feed your internal organs, and all the different things that the body needs is dependent on this breathing cycle, very very simple breathing cycle. So, you know, it's like the same way, you know, when you look at a puppy or a cute puppy or kitten, you feel that sense of warmth and friendliness and care and whatnot, you know, feelings in that kind of category. And you can feel that same thing with the breath. So as you it might, without let's see now, without getting overly complex, we'll just stay with that one alone. So you guys, whether you can breathe in a number of ways. You can breathe focusing on the mouth, at the throat, middle of the chest, or the tummy. You know, it's better to focus on the mouth. So you've got some sharpness, some focus. Otherwise, it takes too long. If I go to the full chest, if I focus on the breathing, on the full chest, I can do it effortlessly. But the thing is, it takes twice as long, 2.5 times longer to get the peacefulness, the stillness. So it's better to go to a small area, like the mouth, which has many, many nerve endings and is very clear and distinct. You can feel it without difficulty. You can feel the breathing on the upper lip section. And so you choose the location. So we'll just do this very simple thing. You choose the breath location in the body that feels right for you. And you can spend, 60 seconds at a time. You can go from top to bottom, you know, from narrow to broad, and find out the best focus. And then I want you to have this attitude of friendliness. You know, it's like the people that you get along with. You know, these people are your friends. You know, you look at them as your friends. The people I wouldn't say enemies, but the people you don't get along with, you've got quite a different feeling towards these guys. So you know, realistically, even for some of you who may be quite intellectual, it's definitely not beyond you to radiate this feeling of like warmth and friendliness. You know, the breath sustains your life, your health, your existence, your ability to live and enjoy one's life, to have quality of life. Without the breath, you know, you're finished in a very, very short space of time. And so we'll keep it nice and simple. You choose the location for the breathing cycle, and then try to, you know, we've got 50 minutes, but I'm not sure if you can sustain that kind of energy for 50 minutes, because these perceptions, you know, like the happy breath, the positive breath, the joyful breath, the breath as my friend, all these require a little bit more like energy, mental energy to sort of drive that particular meditation. But just feel your way with it. If you get tired of it, just drop it. Stay with the breathing. But keep that, you know, if you're comfortable with it, try to keep that changeability principle going. If you don't like it at all, just drop it, and and just stay with the breathing. If you just want to, you know, if you want, say, like a like undisturbed, say peacefulness. Okay, so just make sure you're in a comfortable position, and just breathe. You know, just slowly, deeply, and just, you know, just look at the breath. You know, look at that, the feeling of the breath as your friend, your support. That's, you know, that it's that process which nurtures and maintains your life.